enemy is Conrad, bureaucrat level grade 36, and you are listening to the Canned Air Podcast. Now stop it and get back to work.
Everyone, and welcome to another episode of Canned Air, your tribute to comics and pop culture. I am Jeremy Colley.
And I am Jack Doherty.
And returning to the show this week to talk about a book that we've talked about on the show before, episode 262, Fuhrer and the Tramp. My God, what a fun freaking book this was. I can't wait to talk more about it and all the changes that have come with it. Mm-hmm. And it's been nominated for an Eisner Award. Holy shit. Yes. We welcome creators Sean McArdle and John Judy to the show. Gentlemen, welcome back.
Hello. Hey there.
It is great to have you guys here. We had a hell of a good time last time you guys were here. So
yeah, I think we talked a lot about, X-Men Dex or something, yeah, right?
Exactly. That's exactly what it was.
Yeah. A keen memory on this one here. I forgot that altogether. But in this week's Retro Roundtable, we're going to be talking our pop culture crushes in celebration, I guess, of Valentine's Day as the holiday is upon us. Mm-hmm. So all of our little guilty pleasures will be aired right here for all of you to hear.
Tee-hee indeed, Jack.
Then we're going to turn our attention over to Sean and John and talk more about Fuhrer and the Tramp and everything again it's been up to as of late. But before we do all that, don't forget to find us on Twitter at CannedAirPod and on Instagram at Canned_Air. And if you like what we're doing, want to show your support, head over to patreon.com/CannedAirPod, where for $5 a month, you can get access to the Canned Air Patreon Pod. We've been doing that for over 2 years now. It's recorded once a month. So for $5, you get access to I think we have 27 episodes up there now. That's a catalog.
You can't listen to them all in a month now.
Yeah, it's not fucking chicken feed. That's a lot.
It's at least 2 months you'd have to pay for it to get it all in.
Yeah, so head over there and show your support. Anything else, Jack, before we move on?
I think that's it for now.
Let's kick it off with this week's Retro Roundtable.
Engage. I'll be back. Shut up!
All right, gentlemen, our pop culture crushes. Jack, why don't we let you kick it off?
I was wanting you to go first.
You want me to go first? All right, I can go first. One of which you were there to bear witness to. Some of my first crushes came from the Batman 66 television show. Yvonne Craig and Julie Newmar, which... Batwoman and Catgirl, which we both have had the pleasures of meeting. Mm-hmm. We had Yvonne Craig on the show right before she passed, and we got to see Julie Newmar, va-va-voom, at a con a few years back in Cincinnati. But son of a bitch, man, I crushed on the both of them hard. Probably more so than Julie Newmar, though.
No Martha Kitt?
No, not so much. No.
Nah.
Anytime it was any of the other cat women, I was like, where's Julie?
I didn't like how they changed the cat women. It kind of throws you off as a kid when you're getting used to one thing.
Yeah, I mean, not that they ever did anything bad. Watching it as an adult, moving past, the hormones of a young child, you can appreciate it for all it's worth. But then, that was about Julie.
I think, going back, the very first crush I had that way, the one that made me understand, things in a different way was probably Carol Bouquet, For Your Eyes Only, that James Bond. That is like the seminal James Bond to me, and mainly because of her.
You said seminal.
Well, that's what I learned. That's what I was talking about. That's what I was alluding to earlier.
I'm going to have to look her up. I don't know. I'm not aware of her.
It almost threw me off when you said bouquet, because I was thinking about the TV show Keeping Up Appearances, but her name is Hyacinth Bouquet, if you guys ever seen that show. Mm-mm. She's not
she was the main Bond girl for me.
Keeping Up Appearances is fine, but I like Are You Being Served Better, which is where you started that typical, in your brain, there's one file for British sitcoms, and so when you're trying to think of the name of a British sitcom, hello, you don't know what you're going to end up with. But holy hell, what's her name? Wendy Richards. from Are You Being Served? Mm-hmm. You want to talk about the crush when I was young and we catch those on PBS? Oh my, yes. What's her character's name?
I don't even remember. It's been so long since I've seen that show, but yeah, talk about thinking of a crush.
If I thought long and hard about it, I could come up with it, but I won't.
That's what that's I think. The only reason why I watched that show, because I didn't find it funny yet when I was little watching it. It was only to watch her.
He said long and hard.
I was hoping somebody would pick up on my long.
Oh, yeah, it didn't go unnoticed for sure. Now, I don't know her either. I want to see these people. Man, I have to look them up now.
Yeah, you should watch Are You Being Served just for seeing Are You Being Served, but absolutely for Wendy Richards, you should see it also.
That's British comedy, right?
Yeah.
Hmm. Oh, God, it is the most British of British comedy. Like the reason they finally canceled it was British people were like, I don't know, it's a little British.
British humor,
too much for us.
For me, is kind of like eating saltines without anything on them. You know, I mean, I like saltines. They're not bad, but it's not going to be my first choice. Yeah. You know? But anyway, so, okay, we just got John and Sean's picks there, correct?
Yeah.
All right.
I'll go with Wendy Richards.
Yeah, I'll go with Carol Bouquet. Okay.
don't worry. We're definitely coming back around. Jack, we're over to you.
Okay, because I got plenty more.
Okay, me too.
I don't remember.
I can't believe we've gotten this far. We haven't said Princess Leia or Carrie Fisher.
Oh, man. Shut up. They're on my list.
I don't remember her last name of the show, but Kimberly from the Power Rangers.
Oh, fuck. How did that not make my list?
That's the reason why I started watching the show. And then, I mean, the content was actually in my wheelhouse just because of that. Boing.
Oh, wow. We got an R2 unit over here.
Well, he knows about it.
Sorry. That was my text tone.
Yeah, the mic is working and the ringtone's working. It's fantastic.
What was your last name in the show?
Help me, the R2.
Kimberly?
Oh, I can't remember.
I keep wanting to say Snow, but I don't think that's it.
I have no idea.
Hmm.
No idea. I don't. Tommy Oliver, Billy Cranston, because he was lieu of Brian Cranston,
right?
Or in honor of Brian Cranston.
Zach something and Trini. I don't.
Something.
Yeah.
I don't know. But she was just Kimberly. The hot one. No, it was cool when we got to. Remember, we filmed her panel at Wizard World one year, and I don't know. I just was kind of disenchanted after that panel.
Oh, same here, yeah.
With her, I don't know. She's just a little over the top, a little into herself too much, and up her own ass. So.
I make my own movies now.
Yeah, very, very hipster indie shit.
I'd rather just not watch the young and on TV.
She was like, my favorite creator is Zach Braff. I was like, oh, okay,
no, that's right.
We fucking done. All right. Who's next on my list? Here's one that Jack, I know, will agree with me on. And I'm so excited because I think the same day this episode airs, we get more content of her Ahsoka Tano from Star Wars. Yes. Goddamn.
Yeah.
Goddamn. What about you guys? Are you Star Wars fans? I imagine you are.
Well, you know, original trilogy.
Yeah. I mean,
all
you know.
All diehards here.
Yeah.
Somewhere along the way, my love for it got complicated.
Yeah, same here.
But there's always Rogue One. I mean, holy shit, there's always Rogue One.
Yeah.
Yeah, and then Mandalorian. I was really into Mandalorian.
Yeah.
Yeah, damn good, too.
I don't think I was as into it as everybody else, and I certainly wasn't crushing on any of the characters.
No, not Mandalorian, no.
Well, Cara Dune was kind of
cool. Werner Herzog.
No,
yeah, Werner Herzog.
She's all right. She's too beefy for me.
Werner Herzog gives me a big log.
You don't like a woman who can kick your ass around the room, Jack?
I don't know. That's not my go-to.
Hmm. Well, teach the fire, I guess. Yeah. All right. But, yeah, no, Ahsoka Tano, who people might know from the Clone Wars and from Rebels Star Wars series, has been just an awesome character, to see grow. And I'm excited to see more because we're going to, again, get that, what, seventh season of the Clone Wars coming out?
Or is it now? Yeah.
Yeah. Or they're going to milk that shit out episode by episode.
Yeah, they will. It. Yep.
Bastards.
I don't know why Ahsoka's on the list or why you like her so much, because I couldn't stand her when I first started watching the series.
No. When I first started watching the series, I hated her. It was the last two seasons I came to like her, and then I really liked her in Rebels.
Yeah.
That's where I really grew to like her.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I'm not into that that pervy. She was not too into young. The 14-year-old.
I liked it when she was older.
Yeah. Let's make that fucking clear right now. All right, moving on. Back over to either Sean or John.
I'll go with Elizabeth Shue from Karate Kid.
Oh, wow. That's a good pick. Mm. Damn. I didn't even think about her. She has been cute for years, hasn't she?
Yeah, that lasted from about, 84 to all the way to... What was the Nick Cage movie that she did?
Leaving Las Vegas.
Oh, yeah. There's a good solid 10 years that Elizabeth Shue was on my mind.
She's a cutie for sure.
Also in The Saint, too, she was still pretty hot.
She was in Back to the Future as well.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, the rest of them, not after the first one.
And wasn't she Adventures in Babysitting?
Adventures in Babysitting.
Yes. Yep. Holy shit, man. She's infiltrated more in pop culture than I realized. I like it.
She's sneaky.
Oh, and then Hollow Man. She was in Hollow Man also, like the last and marginally good Verhoeven movie.
I forgot. That was Kevin Bacon, right?
Yep.
I saw that in the theater.
Did you really?
I did. That was a good...
That was you, huh?
I enjoyed that film, though. It looks like they're doing it again in a different fashion. Invisible
Man. Yeah.
Still, I want to see that one now, too.
It looks pretty good.
It's creepy.
Yeah.
The idea of
I thought it was going to be like the Chevy Chase Invisible Man type story, but no, they put the horror twist. Just the original remake of the Invisible Man.
Just where you go around Hollywood being a bigot and they start looking at you as invisible.
It's not just a bigot, he's an unfunny bigot, and that's an important distinction.
There you go. But it's all right. Okay.
Community. That's the only time I liked him.
You know, that's funny because it was shortly after that I learned he was like a raging asshole too, and I really enjoyed him on Community. He was funny as fuck.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, as soon as you learn that about him, you immediately grow disenchanted with him. It's just like
start understanding him as this character and think, oh, that's really him. What a dick.
All right, who would like to go next?
I'll go next.
I think John.
Yeah, well, let's let John go next to keep in sequence here.
All right, now I feel like Sean pushed me to the front of the line at the gangbang. And
it's not the first time.
And there's already a lot of pressure. Well, I don't have to tell you guys. There's already a lot of pressure. Everybody's looking at you when it's your turn and everything, and so that feels weird. But then I also feel like he's setting me up because there's a particular crush of mine that for some reason he wants me to bring up this one. And I say particular because I'm a horny guy, let's be honest. And I've always been a bit of a loser. So horny finds outlet in popular culture fantasy. But my very first crush, and I don't know if Sean just thinks this is quaint or cute or whatever, but my very first crush, other than my mom, because my mom was hot, but my very first media crush. Well, she was. Shut up.
She was my first crush, too.
Yeah, see? And we met when Sean was in his 30s, so that's a little weird, but it's okay. It's only a little weird because she was hot. And she's been dead for 4 months today, which is even hotter. I don't know. Whatever. Look. I had a crush on Olivia de Avalon, specifically her portrayal of Marion in Robin Hood, The Adventures of Robin Hood. The one with Errol Flynn and directed by Mike Curtiz, because there was a local kids show on Saturdays around here and it came out of the Cleveland area called Superhost. It was just the local weatherman dressed up in a really cheap Superman costume pretending to be drunk. I don't know, maybe pretending. I don't know. But that was the shtick, that he was a drunk superhero who, instead of saving people, just watched old movies and talked about them and showed them to you. And so that's where I saw one Saturday morning after the cartoons were over, up came Adventures of Robin Hood, and I just thought, that woman's very pretty, and I like how I feel when I look at her. And she's, she's in her hundreds now, but I think I'd probably still hit it. I think probably. Yeah, I mean, if nothing else for the story, right? Because no one's going to top that the next time you're at a cocktail party. And I went to school with Tom Petty. I'm like, I fucked Olivia de Avalon, and she's 105. That's a fucking Oscar winner, multi-Oscar winner. Thank you. You know, granted, maybe she didn't enjoy it all that much. Maybe it was a performance, but it was a great performance. Anyway, who's next?
Well, you know, thinking of Julie Newmar, you know, even as old as she is, you know, I don't know if I could say no. How could you?
Come here, Jeremy.
Oh, not easily. Not easily. It'd be hard. But it'd be really hard.
What if you broke her hip? Like, to say no. I could never live with myself. Like, I killed her.
It was my fault. I did it.
All right, moving on. Jack, what you got?
I mean, that's what safe words are for.
hip.
Kirsten Dunst. Until she did Mary Jane in the Spider-Man movies. Then after that, it kind of
not Interview with a Vampire.
Huh?
Not Interview with a Vampire.
No. She was a child then. No, God.
Well, you did it to me with Ahsoka Tano, God damn it. Throwing it back at you.
I guess she was always in the age range. Well, maybe she was a little bit younger, I guess.
What else is she in? She was in
Toy Soldiers. The one with the toys.
Yeah.
And she was in the second season of Fargo. She was still hot in that. She was amazing in that.
I didn't watch that series. I heard it was great, though. She was also in Jumanji.
Oh, it was the best out of the three.
There was some movie where she ended up becoming like a bad girl and getting almost real sexual in the movie. I can't remember what it was.
You didn't enjoy her as Mary Jane?
No, I didn't like her.
No? What about you guys?
Did we like her as Mary Jane? Is that the question?
Yeah, did you like Kirsten Dunst as Mary Jane in the Spider-Man films?
Yeah. I mean, she's more of a Gwen Stacy, right?
Yeah. But that's the like.
Why not just call her Gwen Stacy?
It'd have been easier.
They did that weird thing with her and was it Ron Howard's daughter?
Yeah.
Then she played Gwen Stacy.
Yeah, it was quite odd how they did that.
Right. Where it seems like those two should have been flipped.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Like they should have been flipped.
Yeah, I was never.
But I thought she was fine.
I was never, I guess, overly bowled over with her Mary Jane, but I never like disliked it ever or anything. Maybe I don't know.
First. Yeah, it was charming. Yeah, it was okay. It was inoffensive.
The first Spider-Man, I guess. Maybe it was the third one when she was singing. That was.
There was really no Vicki Vale, though.
What's that?
That's true, yeah.
What do you say?
She's no Vicki Vale.
Oh, no, she's not.
Yeah.
Definitely no Vicki Vale. Heard that.
That's my next one, is Vicki Vale.
And another good pick. Holy shit. Okay, has anyone here, aside from you, Jack, have you guys ever watched Samurai Jack? Did you watch the final season of Samurai Jack?
I've never finished it yet, I know who you're talking about.
Yeah.
The cartoon?
Yes.
Is there a live-action Samurai Jack?
No, that's what makes this so disturbing.
No, I never watched.
I mean, it's drawn like Powerpuff Girl style, so...
I find myself aroused.
and it's supposed to be really great, and I'm not going to knock it because I haven't seen it, but I'll tell you why I keep meaning to get around to it. That guy, what's his name? Jenny Tarkatoff or whatever name is? He did, and if you're fans, maybe you saw it, he did like a 3-minute Popeye demo just to show what he would do with Popeye to try to get United Artists, or not United Artists, King's Features to let him do a Popeye.
Oh, wow.
And when it fell through, we just put it up on YouTube. It's the best Popeye since the original Fleischer Popeyes. It's terrific. Wow. So, you know, I'm not going to knock the guy until I try it.
You know, the first, how many seasons, well, I guess there are four seasons that came before that aired early 2000s, and I can't say I was big into it then, I just caught it here and there, but, you know, we were able to have Phil Amar on the show to promote it, so I thought, well, shit, we better start watching it if we're going to be talking about it.
Yeah.
And, did I get hooked? I was so hooked on it, but in that final season, because it all runs together like one long story, right. But the other seasons are just, you know, one-off episode after episode. And the seven daughters of Aku are sent out to kill him.
Right.
And he kills off six of them and captures the seventh and keeps her captive. And during this time, they end up falling in love with each other and ends up being a whole kind of a tragic ending there. But... damn, if she wasn't fucking adorable. She was just something else. And yes, she's drawn like Powerpuff Girl kind of animation, but what can be said? I've got a problem.
That's my number three, Powerpuff Girl.
Well, it is back to you guys, so if that's your pick, we can talk Powerpuff Girl. No,
it's not. Mr. Mojo.
I would say what? We were both talking the entire cast of Twin Peaks.
Oh, yeah.
Man.
No reference.
For a time for Jake not to be here.
Yeah, seriously.
You know, Jake lived and breathed Twin Peaks, yeah. I'm just going to have to take your word for it, I'm afraid.
Good choice. Next.
Well, I remember the frustration of the one actress, Sherilyn Fenn, did Playboy. And I remember the frustration of being 13, 14. I never wanted a Playboy as badly as I wanted a Playboy. And being convinced at the time that I would never, ever be able to get it. Because, you know, by the time I'm old enough, it'll be, like, really ancient. And how will you ever find naked pictures of women once they're out of print? Those fears turned out to be unfounded. Yeah, that was the end of my emotional roller coaster. Next.
All right. Was that both you guys, or I can't even remember now?
Well, do you have another one?
Well, I mean, no.
Okay. Well, we could do it. Well, let's do one that everybody can relate to. Kitty Pryde.
Oh, I did have it bad for Kitty Pryde. Holy shit.
Are you talking the in the movies or just in general?
No, John Byrne.
Just the John Byrne Kitty Pryde.
Yes.
Holy hell. I was so, and again, it was age appropriate. Because I was like, you know, 9 or 10 when I first saw her. So it was okay. It's not, it's like that weird, like what you were saying about
Kirsten Dunst,
right? Yeah. I feel like I have to explain to people because another one of my crushes is Christina Ricci. And when I tell people,
mine too, man.
And when I tell them I first got hot for her in Addams Family, I have to explain, like, no. I was like 1 year older than her. It was okay. It was fine. That I was hot for her in Addams Family. That's perfectly acceptable. And I stick to that story to this day.
I was hot for her in the movie Casper. And I was at the same age that time, too. So not weird.
Yeah.
So I was hot for her in Black Snake Mode.
That's the one where Samuel Jackson had her chained up.
Oh,
right?
Yeah. That's whenever she had to like show the world that she's a woman.
Well, she had done that in Buffalo 66.
Oh yeah, was that the first one?
That was before Black Snake Moon.
You cut out there for a minute. Show the world she's a what?
A woman.
Yeah, she's not a little kid anymore. You know,
I'm not a girl. I'm a woman.
She's not Wednesday.
Now it's Friday, motherfucker. TGIF.
Yeah, man, I haven't thought about her in a long time.
I saw a picture of her recently, and she's not as cute as she used to be. But I guess none of us are.
Yeah, I was gonna say. That was a really good pick. Yeah, I haven't thought about her in a long time. Yeah, I had it bad for her in Casper. Bad. What, you?
I had it bad for Casper.
Oh, shit. Jack, we are back to you, sir.
This one will take explanation a little bit. Lisa Simpson.
Oh, Jesus Christ.
Not regular. What? Like in the flash forward future Lisa Simpson when she's all grown up.
Okay.
Oh, well, that's totally different.
Yeah.
That's not weird at all now. I don't know why I didn't lead with that.
I don't know if I could get past the hair and the jaundice skin.
Well, if maybe it would.
The overbite.
The overbite.
Sausage fingers.
Being around her, you'd probably get the same jaundice skin too. So I guess just kind of
if you're in that world with her, you're jaundiced too, right? Yeah. I don't know that I can agree with you on that, but I can I can come halfway with you because one of my list things here. No, fuck no. One of my things on my list here.
Well, you need my shorts, asshole.
One of my picks is a Matt Groening character, Bean from Disenchanted.
Oh yeah, I'm right there with you with her too.
Yeah, I enjoy her quite a bit, and she's a cute character. She's not jaundiced. Does have the overbite. Mm-hmm. But, what's wrong with a girl with an overbite?
Mm-mm. Well, she's got buck teeth. She doesn't have an overbite.
Well, she's a graining character. She got an overbite even when she doesn't.
Yeah.
But
I don't know why old Lisa Simpson, for some reason, I always thought she was
like when it flashed forward to her as like a president, President Lisa in that one episode. Yeah. Her just
or married to Milhouse.
Oh, I forgot about that flash forward, because wasn't that like her obese on a couch in a trailer? It's like, fetch mama my reaching broom or something. So I can change the TV. that's good shit. That's good shit.
I just assumed that's the one you were talking about.
Oh, Jack, you've got a problem.
I don't remember what the episodes were that I've seen that she was older, but for some reason, I don't know.
I know which ones you're talking about. There's one where it flashed forward to her wedding day where Hugh Grant guest starred.
Yeah. Yeah, that was a good one.
That was a good episode. Yeah, very
okay,
good.
I'm with you. I get that.
And then there was another one where they were showing her future where she became president and like how Homer and Marge were just kind of pushing themselves into the White House with her and stuff. But it was
Maggie was kind of hot too with her little. Well, I think she had like pink streaks in her hair or something like that. She still never talked.
That I don't remember, but that's one thing I do remember is when she was an adult. Anytime she'd go to talk, somebody interrupted her.
Yeah, she never did talk when she was older.
Yeah, I think she was going to sing at the wedding and they interrupted her.
Yes, and they did it in that other episode too, which came much later. I love how they keep that gag rolling.
Yeah,
because it'd be so easy just to like get some fucking tart celebrity of the time to bring in and be like, oh, I don't know, I can't even think of anybody.
Billie Eilish.
Oh, jeez.
The voice of Maggie. No, thank you. All right, who are we to? Are we back to me? You. I'm just gonna throw it out there. It's already been said, but Princess Leia. I mean, she's got to be
of
one.
Course. Of course, she's the number one.
Pinnacle. Yeah. Right,
Jack. Never been for me.
And that's even before the gold bikini.
She was a bitch. I couldn't stand it. I really was never in love with her because she was always that entitled snobby bitch.
I never liked her look, like with the buns on the side of her head. I always thought she looked kind of stupid like that, even when I was young. But every other time I've seen her, I thought she was freaking cute. And I had a crush on Leia for a long. Obviously, look at all the shit on my shelves over here.
I mean, honestly, the first time I had
my daughters watch Star Wars, whenever Lily watches, she was 5, and she points something out about Leia at the very end, and it makes so much sense. Leia should have been in an X-Wing. She stood around, you create this character that was like very aggressive and very like, she took care of herself. She didn't need the boys to save her. She was the one that had to save their skins. And then at the end, you just sideline her. Yeah. She should have been in an X-Wing.
Yeah. I mean, at the end of Independence Day, if the president can get in a jet fighter.
Yeah.
Yeah, really.
In an X-Wing.
If this was made now, if this was made during the prequels, I mean, Padme was doing all that shit. Padme would have been in an X-Wing.
Yeah, you're mm-hmm. right. Not as ballsy as her mother, is she? It's a good point. I don't know. I've always loved that character. For all the women of Star Wars, for some reason, except for Rose, I've not so much.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Aside from her, I've always enjoyed them. But man, I always loved that character. Nothing prolific here. Just maybe. Anyway, moving right along, we are back over to either Sean or John.
Yeah. Okay. I'm really going to admit this. Princess Mushroom from the Nintendo cartoon, the original Nintendo cartoon.
Princess Peach.
I'm sorry, Princess Peach. Yeah, yeah. She was super cute, man. She was really fucking cute, man.
I get it. She's cute.
That mushroom grew. You know what I'm saying?
Oh man, yeah, I mean, yeah, yeah. She's cute.
Yeah. Oh, of course, there's April O'Neil.
You're building up to something, yeah. Jack. I'm waiting. I'm waiting.
I just don't see it at all.
No.
No, I barely remember that cartoon. I don't think she's
had the same basic look for years, right? I mean, so
I didn't watch a lot of the Nintendo cartoons because I was not a Nintendo fan when I was little.
Yeah, we know.
Yeah,
we know.
I know.
You poor depraved child.
Yeah. Sega.
Listen to you.
Okay, Sonic.
Oh, now there you go.
Okay. Here's one that just popped into my head. I'm going to throw out on the table really quick. And it's not even my pick. This comes back from SNL, Wayne and Garth's top 10 swing babes list they had. But Betty Rubble.
Betty Rubble?
She was 4.
Yeah, she was, yeah.
Well,
yeah.
The cartoon.
Yes. Oh, yes. Oh, yes. 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 Yes.
Not a Flintstones 2.
Not Rosie O'Donnell.
Oh, she was in both of them.
That was bad casting.
Yeah, it was.
That was very bad.
Just because casting. She could do laugh doesn't mean.
I mean, John Betty. Goodman, that's thought was cast perfectly, but
yes, and Rick Moranis.
Yeah.
Yeah, for sure. But man, like, what are you thinking?
Just because she can do the Betty Rubble laugh, that's the only reason why she got it. It had to have been.
She knew somebody.
Yeah.
She knew somebody. Had to. Had to. Who played her in the second one?
Wasn't she? Was she only in the second one?
There was a second one?
It was like a prequel. It was like
they went to Vegas.
It was like them going to Rock Vegas to get married or some shit. But yeah, they did another one with different actors.
I don't remember who the Fred was in that one. Yeah. Was it John Goodman for
both? I never saw it.
Mm-mm. I think it was John Goodman again, but that's too long ago and not something I've repeated in viewing. Yeah. So I couldn't swear to it, but I think it was John Goodman again.
I can't imagine.
Well, if we're going with cartoons, you got to go Jessica Rabbit. Oh, boy. Yeah, Jessica.
Now, I remember there being a myth or something that if you were able to pause the VHS at one particular cell, you could see her nude or something.
Yes. I don't know.
Was that true?
Rabbit hole. Yes. Yes, it was true. It was something that nobody caught until you could pause it. But in the initial VHS releases, that was true, and they had to change that in later releases. That one's not an urban myth.
Really?
What?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And apparently they traced it to just one animator who just thought it was funny and didn't think anybody would ever see it, and he was almost right.
Wow.
It's also like a Fight Club thing.
I've got to see it. This I got to see. Man, no, I did not know that. I just thought it was urban myth.
Yeah, it's when she's it's at the very end when her and Eddie Valiant are hanging from the hook and the dipmobile is heading towards them. And you know, it's little Roger saved them in time. It's during that sequence while she's hanging from the hook. At one point, she's turning. They're dangling on the hook, and she turns towards the camera, and there it is. Boy, you got to pause it.
Man.
He wore out three VCRs doing it. No.
By the time I found out, I was looking at screen captures on Mr. Skin. Duh.
I'll be definitely heading to Google after we're done here. Yeah. I got to see this. And I think that's a good note to end the Valentine's Day retro one. Very, very perverted. Yeah. Maybe we shouldn't have done that.
It couldn't have gone any other way.
Yeah, there was no other way it was going to go, was there? All right. Well, with that behind us, let's turn our attention over again to Sean and John and talk Fuhrer and the Tramp. Gentlemen, thanks again for being back here. And I just got to say, man, we had such a great time with this book last time. I'm excited to talk about all the new upcoming changes with it. But before we do all that, for the new listeners who didn't catch you back on episode 262, can you give them an overview of Fuhrer and the Tramp?
So Fuhrer and the Tramp is a fantasy retelling of the making of Charlie Chaplin's The Great Dictator, which was his spoof of Adolf Hitler and the rise of the Nazi regime. We sort of reimagine that as Charlie Chaplin trying to make this film and Adolf Hitler trying to stop him. And so Charlie and his undercover operative friends, Errol Flynn and Hedy Lamarr, have to try to complete his masterpiece of anti-Nazi propaganda while running around the world being pursued by Nazi assassins. And then a handful of other Golden Age Hollywood celebrities like Alfred Hitchcock and like John Pertwee and Christopher Lee, thank you, pop in for cameos. Ian Fleming pops in for a cameo. And fun is had by all, except for Hitler, who has a fucking miserable time.
I have to agree in saying that fun is had by all. Because, again, we had a great time reading this book, and it left such a freaking impression on me. Because my experience with it was I had read it maybe 2 or 3 days before we did the show. So when I was sitting here talking about it, I was, I'm jumping the gun. The book was in black and white.
Yeah.
And when I was sitting here talking about it, I think I was describing it or even mentioning something being in color.
In color, that's right, yeah.
Yeah, that's right.
And, man, that left an impression on me because that's to take on the challenge of a black and white comic is one thing. If you're going to do that, man, you had better do it fucking well. And this is a perfect example of black and white done perfectly because it projects color into your imagination without it even being there. So bravo to you guys again on that. And it's even more exciting to see that there actually is going to be a 5-part miniseries coming in full color, correct?
Correct. Yeah. We're being published by Sourcepoint Press, and it's going to be released as a 5-issue miniseries. The first issue comes out in March, and it's available in previews now. You can still order it. There's no FOC on that. Whenever I took the original graphic novel around and talked to store owners, but also talked to different publishers, everybody unanimously said that black and white books sell a tenth of what color books sell. So we decided to color it. And I wanted to retain that that feeling from the black and white. So I started by trying to really create that Technicolor look of the 30s. And then by the time I really got into it.
God, that's going to be fantastic.
Yeah. Trying to do that in a comic medium, though, I found some of the I really wanted those colors to pop. I really wanted them to pop like they did in like Robin Hood or in To Catch a Thief or any of those Technicolor movies of the 30s, 40s, and 50s.
Wizard of Oz kind of thing.
Yeah, Wizard of Oz. Yeah, definitely. So that's I actually looked at a lot of those and used those as like took stills of those and used those palettes in order to create the colors for the book to try to keep it within that that milieu.
You have just stopped me in my tracks. I've never heard anything like that done before. That is fucking fantastic. And as well as you did on the black and white medium, I can't imagine how awesome color is going to, man, especially a Technicolor look to this. I'm excited to see this. I'm going to have to get this pre-order. But so tell me, how'd you guys get hooked up then with Source Point Press? Because they're no stranger to us. Uh-uh. You know, we've had them through here and many, many projects under their label through the show.
We were nominated for an Eisner last year. And some of the process of doing that and also the Kickstarter, we started talking to Andy Schmidt at Comics Experience. And he teams up with just to let your listeners be aware. Okay, so Comics Experience and Andy Schmidt. Andy Schmidt was a editor at Marvel Comics in the mid-2000s.
Okay.
Are you familiar with Andy?
No. Mm-hmm.
Okay, so he was an editor at Marvel, and he worked on, like, Civil War in
Annihilation.
Annihilation was his big pet project, which led into Guardians of the Galaxy, the revamp of Guardians of the Galaxy. And, you know, he was there for about a decade. And then moved on to do G.I. Joe at Hasbro and stuff like that. But around that time, he started a company called Comics Experience, where he would do workshops and seminars. But when we first talked to him, we was doing consulting with him. So we consulted with him over a couple of different projects that we were working on. And we continued that relationship. So by the time he consulted on and edited Fear and the Tramp. So he's credited as an editor on that, and he brought it to Source Point.
Nice. That, man, what a nice path to Source Point, right?
Really?
That's freaking awesome.
Yeah, it was.
Awesome.
I don't know how much we can actually reveal about this, but I think I'm going to do it anyway because I'm just so happy about the way that they took care of us. We ran into some difficulties with the Chaplin estate. Whenever I first started conceiving of the idea, I consulted with a lawyer, but I only paid a couple $100 for just an hour. And there was an entertainment lawyer in Hollywood. And I thought I was on pretty good ground because, you know, Chaplin, a lot of his movies are in the public domain. He's a public character. The Chaplin estate is actually in Switzerland. There's already a precedent of books being made a Chaplin that weren't authorized. But by the time our Kickstarter launched, and actually at the end of our Kickstarter, I think we were a little too successful, and so we were kind of hit with a little cease and desist.
Oh, wow.
This is what I did not know. And I can understand maybe if I would have actually retained the lawyer and they went more in depth in an hour, I'm sure the Hollywood lawyer would have done the same thing. Maybe, maybe not, because they didn't work in trademarks. And a trademark is different than a copyright. Trademarks, that's like McDonald's. That's like Ronald McDonald or Mickey Mouse or the Nike swoosh. You know, they're way more litigious about a trademark than they are about a copyright. And it gives a creator way less ground to function and work in. Like, you don't have the same leeways of working in, like, okay, this is a parody or a satire. You don't have all these other things that you have with a copyright that you have areas that you can work in. With a trademark, that's a trademark property. It's like a logo Chaplin at that point, the tramp is a logo, and I'm just going to lose that case.
Right. It'd be sort of like if you could make a movie about Walt Disney if you wanted. And you could make a movie where Walt Disney was a character. But if you made a movie about Walt Disney and he dressed up like Mickey Mouse the entire time and you called the movie Mickey Mouse, now you have a problem. Because, you know, Mickey Mouse is like the Nike swoosh or the Coca-Cola wave. That's a thing that Disney uses to brand and identify their business. And so they're not going to let you mess with that. And it's going to get extra and special protection. So it was the inclusion of the tramp in the name and then the inclusion of the tramp character throughout that put us into an area where – and I, by the way, took one master's level, 3-credit journalism law class. Thank you very much. So I think we were legally in the clear. And the lawyer, the initial lawyer thought we were. But it was one of those things where – well, I thought if we changed the title, we'd be legally in the clear. But it's one of those things of, do you really want to take that chance? Do you really want to fight that? Do you really want to go to war with the Charlie Chaplin estate when you say you're such a big Charlie Chaplin fan?
Yeah, that was one of my big considerations. Yeah. She was like, I'm not going to fight the Charlie Chaplin. I'm not going to fight his heirs.
Yeah.
You know, I made this thing because I love the guy and I love what he stood for and what he did. And I love him as an artist and a creator. I'm not going to go and try to fight with his heirs.
And there was something that, you know, in the initial days after this happened, when we discussed it and talked about it, there was this sort of like, oh, that's right. Like, these were real people. And Chaplin still has grandchildren who knew him, who are alive. And we did this story and we made multiple references to Charlie Chaplin slathering iodine on his dick. And it's like, oh, maybe we should play nice with these people because maybe we didn't do something very nice.
Well,
maybe.
I thought it was charming, but, you know.
Yeah, as far as those things go.
But what happened was Andy immediately stepped up with SourcePoint and they sent a lawyer, their lawyer, to us. No charge to us with no, like, we hadn't signed anything with them.
There was no commitment or obligation. They just said, you can have our lawyer.
Yeah. And he drove down and met me. He drove like an hour and a half to meet with me and sat and talked to me for a couple hours. And then he wrote a letter to the Chaplin estate and they worked everything out and they allowed us to finish the Kickstarter. And then on top of that, they made the deal with the Chaplin estate and invested in us and took care of that entire issue so that we are, you know, are officially licensed by the Chaplin estate. That's something I could not have afforded or done myself. That's
awesome. Now, as a result, one of the things we had to do was we did have to make some changes to the story that the estate insisted on before they would give approval. But, they're not major changes, they're minor, and I like to think it heightens the collectability of the Kickstarter trade paperback because that now is the last time that version will ever appear.
That's what I was
gonna ask. Jump on eBay. You should have supported the Kickstarter to begin with, but if you didn't, jump on eBay, pick it up, then get the new issues as they come out so you can, you know, spot the differences. Trust me, it's worth it.
And the changes too. I think it's still pretty funny and pretty poignant. I think we were able to satisfy ourselves and the Chaplin estate. So that's always a win-win.
Yeah, I wasn't disappointed by what we had to do.
Yeah, especially being fans, you know. I mean, what a cool experience. And what, yeah, man.
It was.
That's incredible.
I just thought it was a cool story. I thought I'd share with you guys.
Well, not only that, but then being nominated for an Eisner Award, too. I mean, that had to have been surreal. Oh,
yeah, it was. Okay, so that, too. I was on my way to my buddy's bachelor party, and like we had an Airbnb and stuff, and it's just gonna be a, you know, super drunken weekend. But that night, the first thing we were going to do is go see Avengers Endgame. So we're on the way to that, to you know, this awesome, you know, bachelor party plus also going and seeing Avengers, the premiere of Avengers Endgame. And I look at my email, and Jackie Estrada had sent me an email saying that we were nominated for an Eisner. And I hyperventilated. I completely hyperventilated. And called John. I don't even think I could even get the words out.
I was honestly scared. Seriously, because when I answer, I mean, I could see it's from Sean. I was in my office at work, and I hello, and he's, you know, and I was like, what? Seriously thought he was in pain, and I was really worried. I was like, dude, what's going on? And then when he got it coherently out, we've been nominated for an Eisner. It took a few moments for me to make sense of those words. I'd heard them all before, but in sequence, they didn't register. It was a very strange afternoon.
And we've worked with Dexter for over 10 years, for about 10 years.
Yeah, like 2008-ish we started. 2008,
over 10 years. And I talk with this guy like nearly daily on like Messenger, you know, or email, but never talked to him like voice to voice. So I called him for the first time to tell him that. And, you know, got to tell Dexter that, you know, we were nominated for an Eisner. And that was amazing, amazing feeling. And then I got to go see Avengers Endgame. It was just...
That's cool, man.
Win-win.
That's a good day.
That was a good day.
I got to congratulate you guys on all your continuing success. I mean, what an amazing project. And I can't encourage our listeners enough to check it out. So should we be pushing them to sourcepointpress.com then?
Yeah, it's listed on SourcePoint. It's also, like I said, it's in Diamond. It's on page 344 of the January catalog is the first issue. And that order code is Jan 20, 1976. Jan 20, 1976. And then the other one is the second issue is February or FEB 20, 1985.
Both good years.
And you know, if those numbers aren't right,
good years,
you'll end up with an exciting surprise. So try that.
I'm not sure that's right. Pre-ordering really, really. This is something that I've learned that. I've talked to probably over 300 comic stores, and pre-ordering is very, very helpful and very valuable for independent comics. Like, if you want to pre-order your X-Men or whatever, that does no good whatsoever. They're going to order those regardless. But a lot of indie comics, they're not going to order unless people come in and pre-order them. But right. If somebody pre-orders them and they see that there's some interest,
yeah,
then they'll order 5 or 10. So just one pre-order could be 10 sales.
Just one. You can make the difference with one pre-order. It's the God's honest truth. I'm trying to be funny, but it's the God's honest truth.
Well, the stores, if they happen to get 5 or 10, then it's on the shelf, and mm-hmm. someone's going to pick it up and mm-hmm. take a look at it anyway. So
yeah. It has real estate now.
Yeah, and I think that's one of the things that it's one of my own insecurities I have. I think that I can't sell this idea well enough. I think you have to. See it. You have to pick it up and read it and see it and see Dexter's art. And I think I think I was able to make something that's actually poignant, that actually has some resonance, and characters take these characters and make them actually feel real. I'm really happy with what I did here. And I just want people to read it. I don't care if I make any money at this. I'm already, you know, very much in the hole making this thing. I just want people to read it.
Right. And read it. They will. You just got to get it to their hands.
Give them a little culture for the golden age of Hollywood.
There you go. There you go.
It's straight up fun, too. I wanted to make something for people that were fans of Chaplin, but also, if you weren't, you would still enjoy it.
Yeah, and see, that's the boat I was in. I mean, I'm obviously aware of Charlie Chaplin, but I wouldn't ever consider myself like a fan. I don't know anything about him. And I thoroughly enjoyed reading this book, you know, not knowing much about him. It was just a blast. I enjoyed it so much. I encourage our listeners to check it out. We're going to have links on our social media on Facebook to help direct people over that way. But Sean and John, guys, thanks so much for being back here, man. This has been a blast today.
Yeah, it always is. Yeah, thanks for having us.
We'll do it again in the future, too. Jack, what do we have on the website? Definitely.
Go to cannedairpodcast.com, where you can see show highlights, guest info, listen to the show, follow us on all our social media, become a patron, buy some merch, see some YouTube videos, and if you'd like to be a guest and promote your work, send us an email on our contacts page.
And once again, find us on Twitter at cannedairpod and on Instagram at canned_air. What about you guys? You have any Twitter, Instagram handles you want to throw out?
Yeah, I'm Fear in the Tramp on Instagram, and... They won't let me use the name or the word Fuhrer on Facebook. It's Adolf and Charlie on Facebook.
Okay.
I'm at JohnJudy15 on Twitter. I don't know why you'd want to follow that. I don't do a lot of social media. I'm anti-social. So my social media is just kind of there, just kind of lies there and doesn't do anything.
You're anti-social media.
But if, you, if that's your thing,
there you go.
You know, if that's what you're into, go right ahead.
Very good, very good. Jack, is there anything I'm forgetting?
If you want to catch up on old episodes, or if you're driving around at around 9 a.m. or Eastern time.
It's Eastern time, yeah.
Find us on the Cuyahoga Valley Radio Network.
Yeah, yeah, our show is syndicated to a 9 to 10 morning show on that network.
Monday through Friday.
Yeah, check us out there if you can't get enough of us here, right? All right, and I think that about does it for this week. So until next time, I am Jeremy Colley.
I'm Jack Doherty.
I'm John Judy.
And I'm Sean McCardle.
Thanks for listening, everyone.
Oh no!
Don't run, it'll only make things worse!
Mutt!
Remember, you never want to approach a stray dog, especially one that's foaming at the mouth. Get away from the animal as quickly as you can and tell a grown-up.
Hey!
And knowing is half the battle.
G.I. Joe!
So I encourage our listeners. Awesome. What's that?
I said thank you. It means a lot.
Coming up on 5 Minute News, I'm Anthony Davis. You might think it's partisan because maybe it's critical of one side or the other, but it's not. It's just the truth. And I think that's also something that's kind of unusual for Americans listening to the radio or to podcasts, because the news landscape in the States has been so partisan for so many decades. So 5 Minute News is verified, truthful, independent, unbiased, and essential world news daily.